This is Connor Lestoka from RiffTracks.com. You're listening to Too Much Scrolling. We'll see you in the future.
Good morning and welcome to Too Much Scrolling for March 20th, 2018. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflow.
And we're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information this week. I'm tired, Chip.
You're tired.
I'm so tired. We finally put to bed our winter musical, Seussical. It was wonderful. I can't tell you how excited I am to say that these were maybe the most talented kids I've ever had on stage.
How wonderful, Steve.
I loved it.
Well, now you can put your Cat in a Hat suit back in the closet for maybe for another year.
Or my Grinch, depending on the day.
All right. We can wear that always in Christmas.
That's right. And
yes,
we've got Pam Bedore here with us this morning. Good morning, no Pam.
Good morning, guys.
So I'm so happy to have you back, Pam. I can only express to you how often I have told people about our wonderful conversation, about how you told us all about Utopia and Dystopia with the great courses, how you came on to discuss that. And I'm so happy to have you back.
I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you.
The reason why you're here is what we talked about last time, is there's a new movie called A Wrinkle in Time that was released in theaters a couple weeks ago, and you and I had a chance to finally see it. So tell me your first impressions of A Wrinkle in Time 2018.
Well, I actually saw it with my two daughters, who are 6 and 9 years old, and seeing it with them, it made it amazing. So this is a novel that I loved as a kid. And so, you know, I was going into the movie very familiar with the story. And I don't know, it's hard to imagine how I would have thought about it if I'd been seeing it by myself, because, you know, it's always weird when something you know well is adapted. Mm-hmm. But seeing it with my girls and seeing just the wonder and the excitement that they had for this movie, I loved it. Just straight up loved it. For that specifically.
And some of the critics have been critical of some of the messaging, but it is definitely a children's story. It's a children's book made into a children's movie. So seeing it with your children is definitely the way to go.
Absolutely. And one thing that I've heard other people say too, totally agree with, is that a lot of children's movies have a little bit of, like, have some humor or, you know, some sections that are there for the grown-ups.
Yeah.
You know, this doesn't pay attention to grown-ups at all.
And
this,
I think, is that's really okay.
Absolutely. So it's a very, very earnest movie.
I agree.
Right? And the novel, it's more earnest than the novel. And it's more for children than the novel, I would say.
The book falls into the science fantasy genre. What strikes you as the most interesting factor that Madeline L'Engel was able to capture in her writing?
In the novel, you have these two scientists, and Mrs. Murray focuses on nanotech, so small things, and Mr. Murray on astrophysics, so gigantic things. And in the novel, and this is book one of five, and so in the series, the Wrinkle in Time quintet, we actually see they, as scientists, are constantly thinking about what science cannot explain. And to me, that is the most amazing part of this novel, because so many of us like science fiction or fantasy more than the other. Do you know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
absolutely.
If you just say, what's your favorite genre, sci-fi or fantasy? We each have an answer to that.
Sci-fi.
Sci-fi.
It's sci-fi for me. I don't like Harry Potter. I don't like magic. I don't like the deus ex machina of magic solving the problem. I want some scientific background to it. Others absolutely go the other way and they enjoy fantasy. This is such an interesting mix.
And what she shows in these novels repeatedly, and the five different scenarios in the five novels are each worth thinking about, is that science will only take you so far, and that fantasy will only take you so far. We have to find that balance. I mean, I think this novel is all about balance, mm-hmm. where we look, like, epistemological balance. How do we know stuff? Some things we do know through science. There are things, though, that are ephemeral. There are ways, there are experiences that we have, there are, you know, phenomenon in the world that we can't straight up explain by science. And one of the sci-fi ideas of that, like Arthur C. Clarke famously said, I'll mix up the quote, but is something like, technology looks like magic until you understand it, right?
Sure. I have been saying that for a very long time. If we
but
had
quoting
time travel,
it correctly.
Well, probably not. But if we had time travel and we were able to travel back even 50 or 60 years and hold up the iPhone, that
sure.
thing is magic. That is the Hitchhiker's
Absolutely.
Guide to the Galaxy.
There are no cell phones, Steve.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm just teasing.
That's what I'm saying is the magic of this technology.
Oh, I mean, there's no cell phone tower, Steve. I'm just teasing you.
Yes, that
people
is
would
story.
Be very impressed with your futuristic tech.
That doesn't
with
do
your,
anything.
With your movie, music playing. It'd be like Back to the Future right there.
Absolutely. That is basically the story of Back to the Future.
What Langle Great. Does again and again is she actually shows like, here's these incredible, here's the Tesseract. That's all science. Mm-hmm. But there's mm-hmm. other stuff that we can't really explain. And so I think she makes science look really cool to kids. Like her girl power message is 100% captured in the movie.
Very strong message.
Absolutely. Sure.
And that is something that the critics, again, have been negative on. They say, wow, this is really heavy-fisted. This is message. And we want that release for the adults. And every time I hear a critic say that, I go, no, that is the message of the story, not the movie.
Yeah. Just, again, seeing it with kids and seeing how energized they are. And, you know, one of the issues that really matters to me, I suspect really matters to you guys and a lot of people, is making math and science fun for kids.
Sure.
You know, making it cool, making it something that kids want to do. And, you know, to me, any really engaging story that celebrates children doing math and science, I'm there. I mean, I'm a supporter of that story.
All right. So I'm going to ask, the book was published in 1962. Uh-huh. And obviously it's geared towards young people. It's their introduction, say, to science fiction, time travel, and fantasy. But does it really hold up to modern audiences?
I wasn't sure that it would. I reread these novels over the summer because I'm writing about them. And so I thought, man, like these are a little bit dated.
I agree.
And then, but going to the movie and seeing my kids, I was like, okay, they made it work.
They definitely they used that 21st century technology to show them some images of these ideas. And the images were beautiful. And the way that we saw the evil embodied on the screen mm-hmm. was stunning.
Mm-hmm. Without being too frightening. So I think it was scary, but it was also manageable for kids.
I agree.
And that's a hard balance to hit. And I think they did it well.
So one of the themes of the story that you've already brought up is balance. That mm-hmm. balance between good and evil. That scary and wonderful life that these kids live. What are some of your views on the other themes of this story?
Well, and this is something that they made a lot of choices in the movie, obviously. You are going from, you know, like a 200-page novel to a 100-minute movie. One of the things that they didn't do in the movie that I think makes the book really, really worth reading is the work-life balance. So it's funny because I feel like the mother in the movie, she was very, you know, she was present, but you didn't see Mrs. Murray the way that you see, that I see her in my mind from the novels, because Mrs. Murray's amazing. She is like the mother of four children. I left out two children and I want to talk about that. But she's, those are important children. But she's the mother of four children and she's this world-renowned microbiologist. And she's always like cooking dinner on the Bunsen burner. And, but she turns, like, she makes these wonderful dinners, but they always look like they're not going to work out because they're kind of science experiments and then they're delicious. And that humor is something that I missed a little bit, but that does also make the novel something that your kids could still really want to read because it's not at all identical.
Mm-hmm.
And balancing life and work, balancing family with really challenging careers, that's a very tough thing.
Especially during production week.
Exactly. And during blizzard week in the Northeast.
Oh, the Northeaster.
Exactly. We don't pronounce the TH, but thanks. The Northeaster. But watching an 11 or 12-year-old girl watch her mother manage that during A Wrinkle in Time, and then for the other four novels, the dad's back too. So watching both of these incredibly brilliant and productive scientists manage also being equally committed to their family and seeing that from the kid's perspective, that's amazing. And Lengel does a really terrific job of showing how that can get a bit humorous sometimes, or how it can get really hard sometimes.
And the balance between science and religion in the book is pretty strong, too. This idea of the supernatural as something that we still can see, even when we're studying how things work scientifically.
Absolutely. And I hope you don't mind. I wrote down a quote from one of the books because I just think this is great. This is about the Murrays. I'll just read it. Their discoveries, many of them made in this stone laboratory, had made the Murrays more rather than less open to the strange, to the mysterious, to the unexplainable. And I just love that.
That is beautiful.
Absolutely. And now, have you guys read the other books?
No.
I have not.
You keep talking about these other books and you keep putting books on my list.
So the book that's really interesting for science, religion, split balance is Many Waters. And the other thing that was left out of the movie, as I just said, is the twin brothers who are between Meg. Meg's the eldest of the family. And then her twin brothers, Sandy and Dennis, are like 2 years younger. And then little Charles Wallace. And so in Many Waters, Dennis and Sandy are in their dad's lab. And they're goofing around. They're the jokester kids. And they screw something up and accidentally get carried back in time.
Okay.
Soon, they realize they're, like, meeting people. They meet this guy called Noah. And they realize that they're going to have a flood. And Noah is a crazy guy building an ark. And they paid just enough attention in Sunday school to know that, like, Noah's right. But they don't remember too much about these Bible stories, and they really wish they'd paid more attention because it's happening. And so that's the setup. It's such a great book. There's so many interesting things that happen in that novel. But this idea that, in a sense, religion is, you know, it's a way of knowing, it's a way of thinking, it's also a form of story. It's a way of storytelling. And so is science. Science is a way of explaining. Science is a way of telling the story of who we were, but also who we're going to be. And so the way that she combines that, it's beautiful.
What do you think about the casting decisions for the movie, for this production?
I really thought everyone did a terrific job. Storm Reid, who plays Meg Murray, was exceptionally talented. I thought she did a terrific job.
I think she's somebody to watch. I think that we are going to see a lot more out of Storm Reid in the future.
Absolutely, no doubt. And I think that, you know, the big question is, what's at stake and what's the impact of casting a biracial Meg Murray, of just changing the racial dynamics of that family? And I thought it was really well done. I think this is one of the things that people have had a lot of different opinions on. Again, I feel like I keep going, like, kids loved it. Kids got a great message out of it. I'm in. But so I thought an exceptionally good actor. But also, you know, that's one of the updating of, like, what does an American family look like in 2018?
Sure.
That's a really, that's a really nice updating. It was also nice, I have to say, in my Connecticut theater, to see just a way more diverse group at the theater.
I had a very diverse group in my theater as well. I noticed that right away, that the diversity on the screen has changed the diversity of the theater goers as well.
Absolutely. And I mean, again, I'm thrilled by that. Absolutely. And it makes me realize, you know, as a middle-aged white lady, I don't always notice that there's not a ton of diversity in who I'm seeing movies with.
That's our hope, though.
And it was great to notice that, right?
Right.
Well, the hope is that one day no one notices skin color.
Exactly.
Other than it's just who you are.
It's just who you are. Absolutely. Disney is famous for taking classic tales and making them pop culture icons. This is one of those stories. How did Disney do with taking this beloved story and making it into a film?
They did a very earnest reading of the story, which I think really worked. One thing that I wondered about is losing Sandy and Dennis. Boy, that was one thing that I would have argued for. I think those two characters are terrific in the novel, and they're also central to the other novels. And I could imagine this being a franchise. There are 5 really interesting books, not just A Wrinkle in Time. And it's interesting because A Wrinkle in Time is so big, right? You're going across the universe.
Sure.
The second novel occurs within Charles Wallace's mitochondria. Mm-hmm. It's a biological mystery, and a microbiological mystery, and Meg and Calvin get shrunk down and they end up doing really interesting things inside of a very ill Charles Wallace's mitochondria to save his life. And so it's interesting because I felt like, I really liked the movie. I think they did a great job, but I could see thinking about those other stories and thinking about them as and thinking about the dynamic that Sandy and Dennis brings. So I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do with this, if they ever would consider the other stories. But there are 5 really interesting stories.
What was your feeling about the casting for Charles Wallace? They had to find somebody who was just a little bit older than the character in the story, because it's too fantasy to say that a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old is doing these wonderful things. But this kid really sold the character of Charles Wallace, I think. What did you think?
Absolutely agree. He was great. And, you know, he was able to play, Charles Wallace corrupted in a really wonderfully creepy way.
Uh-huh.
As I was watching, I was thinking, ooh, like, this is a little kid. I don't know how old the actor was. Did you guys look?
I have not looked that up, but
me neither.
My whole time
little,
watching
though.
It.
Yeah.
So much younger in the book, isn't he?
He was 5.
He's 5 in the book. Yeah. This kid was certainly older than 5.
Oh, yes, definitely.
But
I was, as I was watching, I was thinking, oh my gosh, is he going to be able to play evil Charles Wallace? That's a tough sell. And he did it.
I agree with you. I completely agree. That is one of my favorite characters from the story, is Charles Wallace, of course.
Mine too. And, absolutely.
And I think going forward, that's another actor that we need to keep an eye on, because he has that range.
Absolutely.
All right. Yeah. So Disney is really a special company. And what other stories are out there that are other properties Disney could take on and tell the story?
Well, it was funny because watching them take on Wrinkle in Time made me, and this is just, you know, like what I have read and what I read as a kid, think about Anne McCaffrey's Dragon Riders of Pern series.
I don't know that one, so you're going to have to explain that one for me.
These came out at very much the same time. They were really big in the 60s, 70s, 80s. There's, I think, oh, I want to say there are like over 20 novels in the series. But this is a world, the world of Pern starts out really feeling like a fantasy world. And you have a young girl, Lessa, who is kind of taken from her like medieval hold. And she's brought to the Dragon Riders of Pern, and she is a chosen girl who impresses a dragon. And this is a world where they have dragons who can time travel and who merge with their rider telepathically. Hmm. So you can already see how cinematic that would be.
Yes, I'm seeing that already.
That sounds like Avatar.
So you have all these fantastic characters, and it's really a wonderful world because it would be really good for today, I think, because the planet of Pern, it It looks like a fantasy, but it turns out to be a science fiction, which is a move that I really love, and I feel like you guys would love it too. The planet of Pern was settled by colonists from Earth thousands and thousands of years ago, and this planet is a very nice planet, looks great, and then every 200 years, there's another planet that comes kind of too close, and that creates this like biological disaster. And so it lasts for 50 years. And so every 200 years, most of your crops and everything are destroyed. And they develop dragons as a way to fight this biochemical disaster called the Thread. Wow. And so it's a really fascinating environmental story. And come on, telepathically linked to a dragon, I mean, that's the best. And you time travel.
Well, there you go.
There you go. You said time travel. Now I have to read it. Okay. Fine. Yes, Professor Bador, I'll read it.
I always give you guys assignments. Sorry.
By next class.
So what are you working on, Pam? What can our listeners look forward to from your amazing mind?
Well, I don't know about the amazing mind, but I am working on a fantasy fiction course. And I'm the science fiction person who loves fantasy, but I'm sort of taking it on from that perspective. I'm actually, this week, writing Electron Wrinkle in Time. I'll be writing about Dragon Riders of Pern. I have 24 lectures on some of the really, really famous fantasy novels like Lord of the Rings, like Harry Potter, like Game of Thrones. And then some kind of more quirky, lesser known. I just finished writing my Conan the Barbarian sword and sorcery fantasy lecture. So it's been a lot of fun. And that should come out at the end of the year.
So where can we find all of this wonderful stuff? How can our listeners find more about you and what you're working on?
The big project that I just finished, Great Utopian and Dystopian Works of Literature, it's available on audible.com. or at the Great Courses website. And, otherwise my stuff is available in university libraries. I have started using Twitter. Yay. We'll see how that goes for me.
I think a lot of people are using Twitter because of certain people who have gotten onto Twitter for the last couple of years. You're following the crowd. That's good.
Exactly.
Good sheep.
Like a good pop culture scholar, I'm full.
That's right. Pam, thank you so much for coming in and talking to us about A Wrinkle in Time. I really loved this movie. I hope that everybody who has children goes to this movie with their children and expect nothing but a wonderful fantasy children's story. Don't come at it from an adult perspective. That's my biggest takeaway from A Wrinkle in Time.
Absolutely. Let yourself enjoy the fantasy. I agree. Thank you so much for having me, guys.
Absolutely. Anytime. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. I want to hear from you every month.
Challenge accepted. All right. Thank you.
Have a great day.
You too.
Opening this week, there's some movies that are going to be in the theater next to A Wrinkle in Time. Maybe not quite as powerful movies. The first one is called Pacific Rim Uprising. Tell me about your excitement for this kaiju film, Chip.
Steve, I'm excited that you'll be excited for this film.
Yes!
I love kaiju. I love big rubber monsters running around. This is the sequel to Pacific Rim that was big rubber monsters running around, and the special effects are spectacular. This is what I wish all of the Transformer movies were.
I would say, I would agree with that, because Transformers films are like almost unwatchable. but the idea that the defense is going to be get three or four people and get in a big human
giant robot. Yes, sir. Yes,
it just seems
sir.
Like there would be more efficient ways of doing
this. This is the only way that we can defeat the giant rubber monsters, getting into our own giant robot suit and fighting fist fighting over populated areas. And I love it. I really enjoyed the first Pacific Rim. I will watch this movie this week.
Well, it's got a great cast. I'm sure it's going to be a lot of fun, and a lot of people are going to enjoy it,
and we'll all be joyfully watching it, whether we are actually entertained or if we're making fun of it.
All right, Steve, are there any movies that maybe you would describe as a nightmare?
There is a movie called Unsane coming out this week. This is is directed by Steven Soderbergh, and it is the story of a stalking victim who is questioning her own sanity, and then she's pretty sure she's sane, and everybody else then starts questioning her motives. This is terrifying.
This is the pick of the week. But you need to go in there recognizing that, boy, this is the reality of this could be you.
This is raw emotion and so real.
So the premise is basically a person goes into a mental health institute. And
on
then,
her own volition.
And basically signs herself in there and mm-hmm. is, and she thinks she's insane because of seeing a stalker.
Uh-huh. Or having a stalker, yeah.
And then the stalker is potentially there.
Or is he?
Well, there you go. Steve, this looks really good, and it also looks
terrifying.
Terrifying.
Literally terrifying. This is not a horror movie. This is a nightmare on film.
So, Steve, let's just say you were writing a letter to the future, and you were a person that could be in a book.
This is one of the most famous writers of letters that is in one of the most famous books. This is the movie Paul, Apostle of Christ. This is all the story of St. Paul and his letters, and he was such an interesting writer and such an interesting character. Jim Caviezel has to play him.
Well, there you go. And it's just in time for Easter, Steve.
I wonder why they came out this week.
I don't know.
Interesting timing. I'm sure this is a good movie. I don't say Paul to my wife. Just don't. It's not worth the conversation that will occur afterwards.
All right. So I have a teen daughter, Steve. Are there any movies that you would say are good for teen daughters?
Spring break next week. There is spring break happening next week, and your teen daughters will probably want to go to a movie at some point. Midnight Sun is the teen movie of the week. This is the story of a 17-year-old girl who cannot go outside in the sunlight. She has a severe reaction to sunlight, so she lives at night. She falls in love with a lovely young man, and she doesn't tell him that she can't go out at night. And then he finds out, and then there's emotion.
Well, she has to stay out of the sunlight. Is she a vampire?
I bet that there is some negative thing that is said to her about vampirism, and no, she is not a vampire. This is not Twilight.
This is not a supernatural film. This is more of a person with a medical issue.
Correct. No, she doesn't like garlic either.
All right.
That's a different issue, though.
All right, so when my youngest daughter was really young, I eventually had to go out and buy Romeo and Juliet.
Uh-huh.
And I think we had a movie that we reviewed a week or so ago that I mistakenly thought was the sequel. This is the sequel to Romeo and Juliet.
The real sequel to Romeo and Juliet is coming out this week. It's called Sherlock Gnomes. Get it? Sherlock Gnomes. This is going to be fun. This is going to be hopefully just as much fun as Romeo and Juliet. Yes, there was another gnome movie that came out a couple weeks ago, and
They tricked us,
they
Steve.
They did. They totally tricked us into wanting to watch that one. This is the one.
This is an animation film, a computer animated film. Mm-hmm. This is for young people, and it should be fun.
I'm sure. I am sure that this one will be fun. I might see this one as a double feature with Pacific Rim Uprising. That might be my weekend.
Well, have a fun time, Steve.
Scroll with it. There's so many things happening in the world. Let's talk about almost none of them.
There you go, Steve.
We've got a backlog. We've got a backlog of stories, some things that fell through the cracks over the last few weeks.
We've been busy, man.
We've been busy. It's Seussical. Seussical has taken up my entire life. I saw some news this week. First, did you hear that director Kevin Smith had a massive heart attack?
I was away, and I caught it, and
medical technology is keeping Kevin Smith going, and he's fine now. And we send our love to Kevin Smith. Hopefully he can make some good movies compared to the last two.
That's right. I saw that Weird Al had something going on.
Oh, Weird Al. Weird Al is one of my favorite humans on the planet. You know that.
Yes.
And Weird Al came out with a new song, The Hamilton Polka.
I caught it live. I caught it. He was on many of the
talk
shows.
On The Tonight Show?
Yes.
Did you see On The Tonight Show where he and Lin-Manuel Miranda and Jimmy Fallon all got up and lip-synced to this song? The 12-year-old boys on stage. It was the nerdiest thing on television in the last 50 years.
Well, they were having fun, Steve.
I had so much fun. I watched it 7 times. I've listened to this song about 20 times. My son is going to see Hamilton on Sunday.
Really?
For the first time. My 12-year-old is seeing Hamilton. I got him tickets for Christmas. He loves Hamilton. I love Weird Al.
Well, I still listen to it. I probably listen to Hamilton, the Broadway musical, yeah, the soundtrack, every 2 weeks.
Wow.
I still am listening to it. I love it. And by the way, it's so long.
Uh-huh.
You can listen to it in parts and you just catch new things all the time.
The Hamilton polka is very short. You can catch all of it
That's right. Get it done quickly.
All in one fell swoop. It's wonderful. I love it. I've listened to it 12 times at least. I was on Classroom Brew with Ryan.
We had
Ryan on as a guest on Too Much Scrolling a few weeks ago, and I was on his show talking about education. Two episodes, thank you very much.
Rock and roll, Steve.
And?
You are also on Rob Southgate's
podcast. Southgate Media Group had me in for a live show at the Blue Box Cafe in Elgin.
And you guys were talking about games, right?
Video games, yes. Something that I'm not the expert in, but we were talking about old video games. I know my old video games pretty well.
There you go, Steve.
We questioned...
Show that age right there.
We questioned who were the iconic characters of video games, and I think Mario is the most iconic character to come out of the video game era.
Possibly. I mean, Pac-Man could make a case for that.
Uh-huh.
I think that would be somebody you could think of. But I do. I don't disagree with you. Mario basically has worked through time, and they've worked real hard to make Pac-Man that, too.
Right. The Oscars happened. Some things happened at the Oscars. Some good speeches. Some very strongly worded women's rights speeches happened at the Oscars. I'm very excited to see what comes of this new era of filmmaking. The Me Too movement has changed Hollywood, sure, hopefully for the better.
Sure.
Okay, now we get to the really nerdy stuff. You thought video games was the nerdy stuff. Nope. This week, the word embiggen was added to the dictionary, Chip. The word embiggen is now in the English language.
That's cromulent, Steve.
It's a perfectly cromulent word. This is from The Simpsons from 20 years ago.
Every once in a while, I'll just think about it or I'll catch it in something, and it's put there.
Brilliant.
It's an Easter egg of a word. It's one of those words that gets thrown into a sentence and you go, I see what you did there.
Uh-huh. Now it is officially, I cannot mark it wrong on any school work from now on, it is officially in the dictionary. I am very embiggened by all of this. The Loop, WLUP here in Chicago, shut down after 41 years on the air this week.
That's a long run for a radio station.
They were a symbol of Chicago and rock and roll for 41 years.
Well, our use of media has changed, and obviously there are probably more efficient ways to get the type of music that we're looking that they're playing. And it is sad in the sense you get one of these, what you would call an iconic stations of the nation to go down. But
the good news is WKRP is coming back to MeTV in April.
Oh, there you go.
So we can switch the loop for WKRP.
Well, they'll be all ready for Thanksgiving, right, Steve? They got the turkey drop.
God is my witness. I thought turkeys could fly. Sad news. Dr. Hawking sadly passed away, but the celebration of Dr. Hawking's life is amazing. He survived 55 years after his diagnosis with ALS. He was 76 years old when he passed away this week.
Well, for many of us, he was our version of Albert Einstein.
He is absolutely on par with Einstein, one of the best minds of our world.
Sure. And the beautiful part, we got a couple of good, we got a documentary and a movie about his life. Mm-hmm. He was very engaging. He had a lot of humor with his condition.
He was on The Simpsons.
Oh, yeah.
He was on Big Bang Theory. He was on Star Trek.
Wasn't he on a Monty Python?
The Monty Python live show that was recorded that we saw in the theater. He was there, and he was full of humor. He was an amazing person.
And he's very, very human. That's the other part that I would say that from our generation, what we, you know, Einstein that we know is either writings about him or has pictures. You know, Hawking's, we have video of him. We have interactions of him. We really are in a special time in that.
That's right. But another nostalgic moment, another thing is going to be taken away from us. Christmas this year is going to be very different because, unfortunately, Toys R Us is finally succumbing to bankruptcy, and they're going to close all of their U.S. and U.K. stores.
Well, then no one can be a Toys R Us kid, Steve.
I'm still a Toys R Us kid. As a child of the 70s and growing up in the 80s, Toys R Us has been something very important in my life.
Well, Jeffrey the giraffe will have to go and work somewhere else.
Is he going to be in the zoo?
He's going to go to the zoo.
He's going
to
be in the zoo.
Yeah, come see him at Brookfield here in Chicago.
That's right. It's been a great week. We have so much to look forward to in the future. Don't forget, you have homework. Spring break is coming up.
That's right. Many schools are in spring break this coming week. Mm-hmm. In fact, there's like 4 weeks of spring break, depending upon the school you go to.
Right.
But we know April 3rd, we're going to be all ready because we've read Feed by M.T. Anderson. And you can, too, can join in our conversation. If you have questions, you have comments on it, something you wanted to discuss, send it to us. You know, you can use Twitter. You can use Facebook. Just find us out. And then what we can do is we'll try to address that during our, well, as we dissect this book.
Yeah, if you have audio that you want to send us, we can certainly play that on the show. If you have a comment or a question about this book, it's a good book. I have read it. I have read it before spring break.
I read it too, Steve.
So we have done our homework. Now it's time for you to do yours. Feed by M.T. Anderson is our spring break book group reading assignment. So get to it. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think, Chip?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
Well, next week, I'll be on spring break.
All of the kids in our area are going to be on spring break.
And then we're going to Indiana Comic Con that weekend of spring break.
So we're going to be walking around that Saturday. Look for our t-shirts. If you see us, come up, talk to us. We may take a recording of you.
I got some bumper stickers, too. You can have a bumper sticker, too.
Just grab us.
That's right. If you have anything that you want to share with us, if you have any comments or questions, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Send us an email, toomuchscrolling@gmail.com. Our website is toomuchscrolling.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio and every day of the week. And go to our news site, news.toomuchscrolling.com. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflum.
We'll see you in the future.
I just want to think people, things that we don't talk about. What I want to talk about.